Dear Franz, thank you very much for presentation. Dear colleagues, I'm very happy to be here and to speak once again about our excavations and to continue this group of lectures kindly organized by Franz about some aspects of Sogdian culture. I'm sorry again for speaking English and not French. So this time we will speak about the place which is called in scholarly literature Hisarak, a mountainous settlement, a mountainous city, which is located in the Macha Valley of Tajikistan, where we excavated for the last 5 years, and I hope that we will continue our excavations, our work there in the next years too. You see that the site is quite huge, yeah, and it is not enough for 5 years. So let us start again with geographical things, with the locations. Here we see the map of the Macha Valley and of the Rafshan Valley, and here is Hisarak, our place, our destination. It is separated from Panjikent for 230-240 kilometers by car, so allowed 200 kilometers as a crow flies, and it is located in the mountains part of the Zirafshan Valley. Zirafshan is the principal river of Sogd, of Sogdiana, of Samarkand, Bukhara, and other cities. Panjikent, we spoke about Panjikent last time, is located at the beginning of the mountainous part of the of Zirafshan Valley, and Hisarak is located in the very high place here. So, going along the river, which is not, by the way, a very easy way, one can reach Panjikent or Samarkand, and from here also two passes lead to the north and to the south. The one to the north from Sabakh goes to Fergana, to Sirdarya Valley. The pass itself takes around 1 day by foot. There are no roads, of course. Another road, links in 2 days' distance to the upstream of Vakhsh of Garb district. So Vakhsh is one of the main streams of Amu Darya. So the location is very important here because it is on the crossroads of Amu Darya, of historical Bactria, of Sirdarya, of Fergana, and of Zirafshan, of Sogdiana. This could be one of the reasons why the city was built here, but not the single reason. This is the view of the site from the opposite side, and from here we see that the location, the conditions are quite different from what we see on the lowland. So these are mountains, the elevation of the site itself is 2,240 meters. It's not, it is still in the zone of agriculture, but quite risky agriculture. And the life in that places, so in Macha Valley and in surrounding valleys like Yagnob Valley, is very difficult, and the people usually are bound to agriculture, the males and the females to cattle breeding. So all the women and children with their goats go to the mountains in summer, and only the men are making agriculture here. So now the principal agricultural item here is potatoes. So all these green fields are the fields with potatoes, or white is some of the cereals, sometimes wheat, sometimes barley. And the people say that before a potato came there, and it was introduced there kind of in the beginning of 20th century, there was hunger. After the beginning of potato production, the hunger is gone, and at least the people are sad. But of course, the life there is still very, very, very poor. And there, it is very windy and rainy there. You will see on many pictures in the following. But despite this great amount of rainfall, the soil is very poor, and it cannot produce crops by itself even with this rain. So artificial irrigation is necessary. And you see here a strip, a very horizontal strip, marked with green. This is one of the canals. So canals don't go from Zarafshan itself, it's quite low. But they are taken from the upstreams of various streams. This is Valgun stream, and lead slowly to the village and irrigate the places underneath them on the slopes. This is one of the terraces of Zarafshan, and here our Hisarak is located. So once again, the map, here is Hisarak. It is located on a separate hill of the terrace of Zarafshan at the confluence of Valgun River and Macha River or Zarafshan itself. So here is the pass leading to Vakhshvoli, to Batri, and here is the pass leading to Sirdarya Voli, to Fergana. The river itself here is prominent also by its name. We all know that the name Zarafshan means bringing, spreading gold, that it is rich in gold sand. And even today we met some gold washers who were working somewhere around here on the at the basin of Zarafshan. They were not, of course, very eager to speak about their job, their gold washers, but this could be the reason for existence of the large city here. Later we will speak about the existence of golden idols in Martshkat. So the site itself was first recognized by Olga Ivanovna Smirnova, the main numismatist of Panjekent expedition, the excavator and survey maker, who visited it in 1948. So many people ask me how was it recognized, how the archaeologists learned about that site. Actually, the only thing to do was to pose question to the locals if there is like a Khalai Kuhna, the old an old fortress, and so on. And they were they will immediately tell us. So many items on the site are located on the surface level. And for example, this arch of passage was visible from the top. So it was reached without excavations. And Yusuf Yakubovich Yakubov, now the patriarch of archaeology of Tajikistan, who made very much work, especially in the mountainous part of Zarafshan Valley, made some trenches there in 1980s, but quite short in number. He was digging here at this part of the citadel. And the real history of research here started in 1998 when a certain Tajik-Russian archaeological expedition headed by Yusuf Yakubovich Yakubov and his teacher, also a very prominent archaeologist from Petersburg and then Moscow, Boris Yakovlevich Savitsky, was founded. They had some amount of money in 1998 from a private sponsor, and they decided to excavate there, and their excavations led to very interesting results. They were excavating on the on the citadel and found two rooms, both of them with this kind of fire niche. I will speak about it a bit later, and you see the kind of how wood was preserved there. This was a completely fantastic state of preservation. Actually, the reason for this preservation of wood is not clear for us even today. So usually it is spoken about the climate, but climate, you know, it's very humid. Maybe the reason is the soil. The soil is very dense, like cementum, something like this. It's not like loess. It's very hard to dig, by the way. It's very small, dispersed item, but maybe it makes a sarcophagus so that the air doesn't enter into the into the debris. So, and what we know now, for example, that the condition of preservation of organics can be different in two rooms which are separated by one wall. So this is room number 3, and in room number 6, just after that wall, there are tears and not organics. So, and our expedition, Panjikent expedition, first with the help of Yusuf Yakubov and then alone, started working there in 2008, where we made the first very short survey trip. And in 2010, we made topographic plans and deconservation of wood. Here is one of these wooden items. And from 2011 to 2014, we are continuing excavations there, sometimes at minimum at 2 spots and maximum at 4 sectors at different parts of the site and its surroundings. So here again is the topographic plan of the site and the image on Bing. Google Earth is not so good. So these are the principal parts of the city. This is the so-called Shahristan, the main city. 3 separate hills, which we call quite simply Citadel 1, 2, and 3, and suburban things. And in the last year, we had the drone, and we made a video from the drone, and I'm going to show it to you. It will take no more than 2 minutes to see this. Yeah, so here we are flying above the Citadel 2, a military forepost. This is the place looking towards Zarafshan River. Yeah, and on the background you see the main city. Here we are coming to the Citadel 1, the palace. At least it's south, it's thousand-parted the palace, which is in the process of excavations now. And then after this small gorge, we come to the Shahristan, to the main city, which was also defended by walls. Sometimes they look quite insignificant as compared to the natural gorges here. This is Valgun River, the pass to Vakhsh Valley, and there is Zarafshan. Here was Madrushkat, the greenish thing, the modern village, one of the biggest villages in the area. And here are the defensive structures built upon gorges at the entrance of the city. And here is also the Shahristan, and you see here the lines of some walls as they appeared here. At this, here are the suburbs with necropolis and with some suburban constructions. A mansion at the Shahristan, and again the citadel, the palace. Yeah, so this is a more small tent for the archaeologists living here. Citadel 3 in the front and Citadel 2, the barracks in the back. And so here we are arriving. It's not very good to fly with drone during excavations. because all the workers don't work and look in the sky. Yes, thanks to Daria Hook from the Computer Department of State Hermitage, we built this short video of the site, which I think can give you some information about it. From the very beginning, it was clear that Hisarak, located opposing modern Madrushkat, would correspond to the place called Marchkat in Mount Mook documents. The documents which were which were left in 722 in mostly in Sogdian language, as I told you and last time about that a little bit, and belonging to the archive of Devastich, the last independent ruler of Panjikent. So it appears 7 or 8 times in the documents and in different relations. So in very often it is spoken about the skins from Marchkat in documents A7 and B4, and also garments from Marchkat. Moreover, there are chain mails from Marchkat, which would indicate quite a sophisticated artisans level, handicrafts level at the site. And even once there is in B4, there is kafis, the number or the unit of volume of Marchkat. Marchak is probably shortening of Marchkat, which would indicate that it is a kind of a principal place for making this unit, so like Tabriz or Isfahan or places like that. And sometimes a basin attendant of Marchkat, and later the canal attendant of Marchkat is mentioned. And at the at Hisarak we find a place where this basin, this Avzak could be located. And apart from it, a ruler of Marchkat is also mentioned in one of the documents, which is about escape of several workers from a certain working place. Maybe it was the construction of Marchkat itself, so of Hisarak. So to make it clear, Madrushkat is located very close to Hisarak, and there are no other archaeological sites around Madrushkat, and consequently we are in our complete right to consider that Hisarak is Marchkat of Mount Mug documents. And it is indeed quite a large city. It is 7 hectares, and which is around half of Panjikent, or almost equal to the Kalae Kahkaha, the main Ustrushana site to the north. And it cannot be in any way compared to any other settlement in the mountains of central Tajikistan, because all the others are much, much, much smaller. And even today we don't see any traces of urban life there, only villages, but like 1,000, 2,000 households maximum. But here we see the city, and this is not, it is always a challenge for us to understand why this city was located in this harsh environment. So let us start with excavations. I'll start briefly with what was done outside the city, the necropolis. Only one one grave was excavated. Unfortunately, it was not documented properly. So the graves there were a kind of stone chests, similar to what we have in Pamirs or in Fergana, where the bones were located. So in this, close to the head of the deceased, not exactly in his mouth, but somewhere around it, a silver dirham was found, and it was issued in Al-Wasit in central Mesopotamia in year 96 of Hijra, which corresponds to 714, 715. And this find has a very interesting parallel in the information of Arabian historian Al-Baladhuri, who wrote that Al-Buttam, in translation of Murgotan, Mukhalad raided Al-Buttam and conquered it, and the inhabitants afterwards broke faith, so became infidel again, and he left them and went off in another direction from them, so that they hoped he had withdrawn, but he returned suddenly and entered their city, city is not so much necessary in the text. So dakhala Bhutan, so he entered Bhutan. Just city is not mentioned in any case. And Jahm ibn Zahr, the attendant of Mukhallad, also entered it and seized in it money and idols of gold. So in Bhutan there were idols of gold. And the people of Bhutan today claim relationship to him. So Valahi, so they became his maula, his clients. So Bhutan is all this mountainous region of central Tajikistan, where there are no other large cities, no other centers. And so again, necessarily, we have to suppose that this attack of Mukhallad, mentioned by Balazuri, must have affected this place, this Hisarak. Consequently, the idols of gold, if they ever existed, were located there. Now we turn to another excavation at Shahristan, at the main city. Excavations were made by Larisa Smirnova and Firuz Aminov, and up to today, 9 rooms were discovered. So there was an open place, room number 4, and several household items, 5 and 9, corridor, 6, also like a household sink, some corridors, 3 and 7, and 3 rooms of the type which is usually called as chapels. Now, room number 2, number even 4 rooms, number 5 and number 8. So before going to chapels, just a few words about pottery. This is the typical amount of pottery found there, as it is usual in these mountainous regions. About 70-75% of the pottery finds are handmade. It is not wheeled pottery. Wheeled pottery is not known in the mountain there, and sometimes we can be sure that the wheel-made pottery was import, but in general it all corresponds to what we call early medieval or pottery of Central Asia. One of particular items are shown here. These are the large vessels, khum, the pithas khum or khumcha, tagara, these things, so large vessels with this kind of decoration at their lips. So there are fingerprints one after another. It's quite typical for Hisarak and very little known in Panjikent itself, in ancient Panjikent, not today. So this is a potter from Panjikent, and this is his khum, and we see that the decoration here is more or less similar. But at the contemporary time, it is very widespread in Gardani Hisar and at Qum in the mountainous part of Zarafshan Valley, and also in Ustrushana, for example, in Chilhujra. So this is one of the items which which separates pottery from here, from Panjikent, and relates it to Ustrushana and mountainous region. So here, as in many other cases, we cannot say for sure what is geographical feature and what is temporal features here. So usually Chilhujra and other sites at the Ustrushana are considered to be a bit later than Panjikent, but maybe this was the geographical feature to make pottery with this kind of decoration, or maybe chronological. In very late periods of Panjikent, we find few items of that. So this is the main pottery things, but in some instances we find earlier and later examples as well. Some of them are probably what is called antiquity period pottery, with this horizontal polishing, for example, or this polishing very exact with this footage and handle. Interestingly, this is the constructive floor of the citadel one. So it was brought from somewhere probably, but earlier than the main inhabitants. And sometimes we find something later. We don't have any glazed pottery there at all, but we have examples of this double handle with a double string, which is not earlier than 9th, but probably also 10th century. This kind of decoration of tagara is also typical for 9th to 8th, or maybe later periods, but not 8th century. It is in a secondary room at the Shahristan, at this mansion, which I described above. So three rooms there have the features of so-called chapel. These chapels, their main features are the a fireplace in a niche located to, next to the wall, sufa, the podium around its walls and entrance with the so-called tambour wall. So this is a kind of reconstruction of ideal chapel, and this is the decorated niche from one chapel excavated in Panjikent in 90s. And most of the scholars were sure that these rooms were a kind of sacrificial places, fire altars and so on, which was used for home prayer, and the only serious voice against that was by Paul Bernard, who in 1981 published, among the other notes about Delverzin Tepe, that this type of fire niches and of these rooms is rather the warm room for winter. So this was the fireplace for heating, and the people were living here around it, and so it had nothing to do with fire worship and so on. And I think that our material from Hisarak supports this idea. So here I tried to show the amount of these chapels in different places. So in Panjikent, of course, it's not the complete picture. It's only taken from what was in Raspopova's book on Zhilishche Panjikent. It's already minimal, 1.3% of these kind of rooms. But they are large amount at Gardani Hisor, the completely excavated village, and at Qum, where there are 15%, and at Hisarak, when they are almost a quarter. So these places are located, this is warm conditions, colder, and very cold. So here, the average temperature in January is like 15 degrees below zero. And it is clear that that here the room for heating is is very much more important than in Panjikent, when it is only like zero in January. You know, nothing serious. And another item is the amount of these rooms. So let's turn to the mansion. So here is chapel, a bigger and better decorated one, another one, and the third one, very sublime, which shows that there is a great amount of this kind of rooms in one living quarter. So it is clear that they were used for living and not for special worship and so on. And later on we will see some other rooms of this type in the other parts of the city. But not in this one, not a citadel two, which is a garrison, a barracks, which are built according to the shape called so-called comb-shaped garrison. So what is the principle here? The main corridor on one side, sometimes it is in the center, but not here. This is the corridor. This is the corridor. And from this corridor, five rooms are going through one after another with very huge walls. They are all vaulted, and at the at its western edge, there is a kind of an open veranda with very beautiful look to the to Macha River. These comb-shaped garrisons were found in very many places in Central Asia, and there is a large amount of literature about them. This is the main corridor, as it was before excavations, and after being excavated, it's here, it's 18 meters long, At one side there are five entrances, and in the other side there are three windows, and it is standing on the slope of the hill, very very difficult to climb, and in some places it is even was even sophisticated, consolidated with stonework below the brickwork of the the citadel. The principle of construction here is always mud bricks, no paksa at all, due to lack of water in the on the place, and the lower part of walls were often made of stones and then mud brick. Mud brick is in that place is a kind of elite building construction. So even today in in the local villages, the living rooms are made of mud brick, of sun-dried brick, while the economical rooms rooms for cattle and so on are built with stones on loose plaster. So this is the main corridor, and here you see the doors with very special way of making an arch, and windows which don't have arches. And these doors led to five more or less uniform rooms like this. Some of them had a window on the opposite side, on the opposite gorge, and the uru and the entrance to the main corridor. One of the rooms was probably a pandus leading to the upper store. The interesting features found there were decorated, first of all, decorated bricks. Bricks made in a special shape, which was not rectangular as usual bricks. So we have a triangular, or rather a section of bricks, bricks with cross-section, bricks like these five-pointed stars, this brick, etc. And we find them in some elements of architecture of Sogdiana and of later periods. So the best example of Sogdian castle is a bowl from Anikovo. And we see here these lambda-shaped bricks. They are here, and bricks with a cross inside. They are here. And on the later mausoleum of Samanids in Bukhara, we have among this decoration, already dried brick, already baked brick decoration, we have this element, which is corresponds to this one from Hisarak. The other things which were found there and in other places were, of course, organic things. And this is just a small amount of what was found on the citadel too. So this is wood, this is dung, this is a kind of strip, this is this is made of willow for hanging something. So this is like a very small piece of silk, and this looks like what is called tumar today, so the amulet where today a verse from Quran is kept, but here nothing was inside. And a number of skins, very nicely done, and we can recapitulate that in Mount Mook documents, the skins produced in Markshkat were mentioned. On the next pictures, there is something more special. Yes, there is wood with decoration and a mummy of a dog. So yesterday I was asked if there are mummies found there. Yes, we have this mummy of a dog. The poor creature was lying between the bricks, and so maybe hunting some mice or whatever, and a brick fall on it. What is interesting in this dog, apart from preservation, that it is Sogdian dog, and this dog has close correspondences in wall paintings. Look at it, its ear. So it's like in general, it's like a modern leveret. So the ear is going backwards, And this is the painting from Panjikent with hunting dog. The color is different, but the ear is similar. And this is from Afrasiab excavations of Yurikarev with the dog also with similar shape of its ear. So we are planning to make a genetic analysis of the this dog to know about its origins and so on. And another thing which we found there were Sogdian documents. So this is one of them in the location where how and what was it found. So you see what it was the debris there. So everything is full of various wood, small pieces, straw, especially very much of dung and dry dung, the kiziak, and even our meter and indication of the north in the, after a 2 weeks of work at Hisarak don't principally differ in their condition from what is from the 8th century. So, seven documents of fragmented documents were found. Among them, two are complete and one is almost complete. These are two, one of the complete ones and complete to its half. So it is one and the same thing. The photos are made from different sides of it. And they are similar in their content. They are in Sogdian language and in Sogdian script. Of course, so there are receipts. It starts with the date year 30 of the ruler Zakangun, year 31 of the ruler Zakangun. Who is this Zakangun? No, probably the ruler of Madrushkat, but he is not attested in any other texts. In one case, it's Nanidat, the author of both texts. One of the received from certain Repuch from Vadiv. Vadiv is a village like 70 kilometers from there to the west. 16 tasuj of salt in kind of tasuj and written by Nanidat. And another in the year 31 is Nanidat receives from certain Veshpian, not clear, 10 tasuj of salt. These are the receipts, and one is a letter, a private economical letter to the lord, ruler, brother, sovereign Friyak, the elder, the principal of Raag, from his own slave, guardian of buildings, or maybe the architect of the town, the report, Pachkwana. And Lord, I report it to your majesty personally. And Lord, I'm short of dresses and shoes, or maybe shoes made of textile. And Lord, you are so karnchucht, not clear word. Please send me dress and shoes, dot. So in one of the years of excavation, we made a brief survey of Raag, and here is Kalai Bodravak, the castle of blown with the wind, yeah? At Raag, it is located here, and some pottery was collected there as well, and this one indicates that it is more or less contemporary to Hisarak. So the addressee of this letter was recovered. And he asked about shoes and dress, and this is probably the two part of the shoes excavated at Hisarak. Not the one of the principle of buildings, but maybe similar thing. And finally, we are going to the Citadel 1, the larger part of 0.6 hectares, which is a palace, at least in its southern part. We are looking, the south is at the top. So the northern part, we didn't touch yet, and it is maybe a different project to do it. So in the center of the citadel, we see the large square building, 10 and 10 meters, which resembles their reception hall of Panjikent or of other places in Central Asia. But it's very, very huge, huger than bigger ones in Panjikent. The excavations done there in 1998 didn't give any interesting results. So the north of it, there was a corridor, T-shaped corridor, the so-called couloir, and a yard. Here, a court for receptions with reception, sufa, and several so-called chapels. So here is again the plans here at Hisarak were drawn by Yelena Buklaeva, who is here, who was the main architect at Panjikent in Marshak's time. And now we're very happy that she works with us at Hisarak. So this is the yard, and this is the so-called couloir, the T-shaped corridor. Here it is, and one of the so-called chapels. These two chapels, 3 and 2, are also located quite close to one another, and very similar in their shape and design. These are some images. So this is chapel number 3, partly restored column and another column at the tambour wall at the entrance to it. Room 2, also the chapel. You see how low was the ceiling here, so less than 2 meters high in both cases, which is also very important for heating. So there is very little wood, very little brushwood in that places, and so they try to economize the use of brushwood, and that's why the floor is elevated and the sleeping place is above the bottom of the chimney. And that's probably why the ceiling was so low, just to make it warm for some time. This is the court, the open yard. Here it was maybe the reception of the King Zakangun. Why not? And this couloir, T-shaped corridor leading to the main structure to our left, and to other rooms here. Of course, the interesting things which were found here are, of course, first of all, wooden items. The parts of the ceiling with good elements of their joining to one another. You see them here and here and here and here, and also the roof. The roof was made of beams, and then of willows attached to the beams with the help of straw. Straw is here. So there were numerous elements. They were not so much found in situ, so they were like located there by somebody during their when the people were leaving that place. So they were one above another, and so on. And these two ones were surely replaced from the different place. Some wood was decorated, like the ones here. This is one of the corner parts of the beams with this decoration, the rhombic thing, this kind of palmettes above them. The very exact parallel is found again at Urta Kurgan in Ustrushana. And another way of decoration here were these stamped plaster decoration. They were painted with a red paint with a red pigment inside, and this is the off-print of a stamp of a mold with this very typical design of the of the grape twig. So the grapes do not grow there. So this design, as many other things, had the palace and these high standard items were all imported from the lowlands, as well as painting and so on. The decorated wood, the decorated wooden items, the blocks like this, and these two were found close together, and this one has a worse state of preservation and this one is excellent. We see here that the background is painted with red. So we have wood of very bad quality in Panjikent, at Kalaikahkaha, at many other places in Central Asia. But there the conditions are so that only burnt wood can be found. So, and of course in that situation the painting is completely lost. Here we see it all painted, although the patterns for decoration cannot be compared to the best examples of what we see at Panjikent and at Kalaikahkaha and other places. So here we see three of these blocks from Hisarak, one of them partially reconstructed here. Of course, this is Panjikent, similar type of blocks. Jumalak Tepe, it is Baktria Kuyruk Tepe, it is Semirech Yakucha in Chinese Turkestan, and Gardanihisar, it is here, Gardanihisar, which is relatively close to Hisarak in Zarafshan Mountains. And in these carved wooden details, we see similarities from one side to Gardanihisar in respect of the single pearl decoration here and here. But from other items, from the solution of making the flower, the rosette inside, it is very similar to Kalaikahkaha. And at one moment, I was of the opinion that the artisan at Hisarak saw the examples from Kahkaha and wanted to copy them, but now I cannot find enough material by now to show prove it with surety. In any case, these are the floral designs from Hisarak. The usage of this type of wooden blocks is not clear, but probably it was related to something like caissons in the floor, like this, yeah, which were decorated with these flowers and so on. In Panjikent, of course, there are not only flowers, they could be the animals, the human, the group figure, the groups of figurines and so on and so on, much richer in the artistic patterns. But in one case we have an element of carved wood with a more complicated motif. Unfortunately, it was not in a very best state of preservation, and it needed very much work of restorers in order to turn it into this reality, and it is a fragmented piece. But we see here two animals, one above another. The upper one is very elegant and it looks like a gazelle looking backwards, and at its bottom there seem to be a kind of a feline, probably a lion if it is his hair, yeah? And the situation, the location of these two animals above one another puzzled me for a long time and still continues to puzzle me, because if it would be a scene of a lion hunting gazelle, which is quite a common thing in the art, he should be at the top, but he is below. So how did they join one another? I don't know. So, for example, here is the hunting scene from one of the Sasanian seals. Here is the group scene of hunting where the gazelles are all one another. But what it is from Tagebustan, also Sasanian work. But here I also cannot find the place for the lion. Maybe a solution can be found from the silk items. So we see that the carved wooden thing, they have the pearl border and something inside and some decoration at its four corners. And this model was very typical, was standard for the patterned silks of the early Middle Ages. And if we consider that that carpenters were copying silks, which is a normal situation, that in cheap material, the expensive material is copied, then we can imagine that not only the pearl borders, but also something between them can be located. And in the silk from Sans, I know it thanks to Anna Alexandrovna Yerusalimskaya, before 814 of Common Era, there are roundels with main image and four animals at its part. And so these two animals on top are of red color and resemble like big cats, and the black animals like dogs are at the bottom. So, and they are following one another. So this belongs to the upper design of the silk, and this to the lower. And if we imagine that it was that a side part of the silk was taken for imitation, then it appears clear that it appears possible that this lion and gazelle formed two different elements of their design. So this is the solution I see here, but of course I cannot be sure in it, and I will be very much like to listen if you have any opinions about that. Finally, the wall paintings. Wall paintings also did exist there, and one of them, so there were several small pieces found at Citadel 2. They were in debris and very small, and only we could recognize that it was multicolored. It had green, blue, red, yellow, and so on. So an interesting thing was found at the angle of the room 2 of one of these chapels. Unfortunately, the conditions of the preservation was not good, so it was in the lower surface of plaster, and later it was covered by another plaster without painting, without pigment. And when it was revealed, some part of the painting was on the backside of the upper plaster, and some pigments were on the front side. And so this reconstruction is based on double tracing, so the tracing of what remained on the wall and later was removed, of course, and a tracing of what was glued to the upper plaster. And we see here two animals running one after another. Which kind of animal is that? So we don't have horns here, but we have a very specific color of their body and a very specific tail. And this tail and color indicate that probably we are dealing here with Bukharan ram with large horns like this, which is very common on Sogdian paintings. And so they are running, probably it is a hunting scene, and in several other chapels in Panjikan there were hunting scenes depicted on its walls, but many items here are completely unusual. So the water is it's very typical for Sogdian painting. The usage of green color. The usage of green color is completely unknown in Panjikent. And it is very little known at Kalaikahkaha as well. So there are little examples of wall painting in green there. Why is a big question? Boris Ilyich Marshak thought that green would fit the very clear color patterns of the paintings may be, but in other places around, like in Eastern Turkestan or in Bactria and so on, green was very much used, and here we see it too. And another item which is different from Sogdian painting here, apart from green color, is also related to these trees too. Because in Sogdian painting, it's usually the principal division between two grounds. The foreground with some action on it and background which is completely alien to it, which is a standard one color. Sometimes it could be mountains, but nothing else. And here we see the interplay between the foreground animals, foreground rams, and the trees in the background. It is a more forward idea of the space division in the art as compared to what we see in Panjikent. Of course, this painting was not, I'm rather sure that this painting was not produced by a local, by a local artisan, but an artist from somewhere in the lowlands, just to say that this Bukharan rams don't live in the mountain, they live in the deserts. But still, it is a kind of quite something more forward than Panjikent paintings. And to finalize my speech, we have expectations of some other wall paintings. Room 8 is located after the corridor. We have this wooden threshold at the bottom, and here is room 7, the corridor, and now room 8. And you see here the plaster, this is the upper level, and here is the lower level of it. Yeah, I'm finishing.
You can have that.
Yeah. Here is the details, and you see some traces of color here, and it is also here. So it is white, and it is also some elements of blue. So again, you see the height, almost 2 meters from the ground level, and the painted surface is again covered with later plaster. So we have some expectation that we can find something there in that room. So in the next year, our plans for in this year, our plans for Hisarlık economic conditions are quite small. So we are going to trace this room from the top to analyze its size and to take samples of the painting here to understand what to do it for restoration work, etc. But in the next years, we hope to continue our work there, and everybody is welcome to Hisarlık. And you can write down this haftkul.tj. It is the name of tourist agency with whom we are working very intensively in the field of archaeological tours to Tajikistan, with participation in excavations at Hisarlık and at Panjikent, and visits of many other fantastic places like the Oxus Temple, for example, and His Excellency the Ambassador of Tajikistan, Hamidjon Nazarov, is here, and we spoke with him some days ago about the possibilities, and he, one of his main one of his main issues for being ambassador here in Paris is to make tourism in Tajikistan stronger. So, bienvenue à Hisarlık. Merci.